This is Captain Rick reporting. I'm back with part two of the Tuesday, March 15th edition of the Decatur Herald in Review. I'll be starting with the obituaries. Arvetta H. Barnes, Decatur. Arvetta Bailey Barnes, 91, of Decatur, passed away on March 12th. A graveside funeral service will be held on Friday, March 18th, at 3 p.m. at the Mount Auburn Township Cemetery in Mount Auburn. The visitation will be on Thursday, March 17th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur. Memorials may be made to American Heart Association or the American Cancer Society. Helen J. Coates. Helen J. Coates, 89, of Delavan, passed away March 4th at Heritage Village of Kankakee. Cremation has been accorded. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, March 17th, at Prairie Rest Cemetery in Delavan. Davis Oswald Funeral Home in Delavan is handling the arrangements. Betty Jane Gentry, Decatur. Betty Jane Gentry, 86, of Decatur, died 3:50 p.m. Saturday, March 12th, at Imboden Creek Living Center. A funeral service celebrating her life will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, March 16th, at First Christian Church, 3350 North MacArthur Road, Decatur. Visitation will be 1 hour before the service at the church. Pastor Tim Revis will officiate. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the First Christian Church. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of the arrangements. Carolyn Manock, Clinton. Carolyn Walker Manock, 98, of Clinton, passed away peacefully at her residence at 7:30 a.m. March 4th. A celebration of life will be 11 a.m. Saturday, March 19th, at the Clinton Presbyterian Church in Clinton, with Reverend Benjamin Keller and Reverend Samantha Keller officiating. Graveside service will follow at 3 p.m. at Elmwood Cemetery, Elmwood. Visitation will be 4 to 6 p.m. Friday, March 18th at the church, and also 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be directed to the Clinton Presbyterian Church Elevator Building Fund or the Clinton YMCA. Stephen B. McGee, Decatur. Stephen B. Boss McGee, 53, of Decatur, departed this life on Friday, March 4th at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services celebrating his life will be held 11 a.m. Thursday, March 17th, on North Jasper Church of Christ, with visitation 1 hour before service. Walker Funeral Service and Chapel is in charge of the arrangements. Nancy Jane Voyles, Finley. Nancy Jane Tippett Voyles, 93, of Finley, went to be with her Lord and Savior Sunday morning in her residence, March 13th, her birthday. A celebration of life will be held Wednesday, March 16th, from 10 to 11 a.m., followed by the funeral service at 11 a.m., all at the First Christian Church in Findlay. Burial will be in Wright Cemetery near Findlay. The family requests casual care. Memorial donations in her honor may be made to the First Christian Church of Findlay or Eastern Star. Harold Walton, Decatur. Harold K. Walton, 85, of Whitehall, Pennsylvania, formerly of Decatur, died Sunday, March 13th. Service. Funeral services will be held 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 18th, at Britlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, 2827 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur. Family and friends may pay their respects from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Friday in the funeral home. Interment will follow the service at Macon County Memorial Park, Harristown. Memorial contributions may be made to the Alzheimer's Association, 2309 West White Oaks Drive, Suite E, Springfield, Illinois, 62704. Following are the funerals pending for today. Thomas S. Elliott, 52, Monticello, who died Sunday, March 13th, Wright Mackey Funeral Home, Monticello. Dale R. Hunter, 82, St. Elmo, who died Saturday, March 12th, Miller Funeral Home, Vandalia. Luella Johnson, 55, Decatur, who died Sunday, March 13th, Morn and Goble Funeral Home. Ollie McPhail, 66, Decatur, who died Sunday, March 13th, Walker Funeral Service and Chapel. Crystal Jean Norfleet, 44, Deland, who died Monday, March 14th, Calvert Funeral Home, Deland. Jeanette Marie Westendorf, 56, Effingham, who died Monday, March 14th, Meyer Funeral Home, Dietrich. Additional funerals listed for today are Donald Larry Calvert, 81, DuCoyne, formerly of Brownstown, 11 a.m. in Maplewood Cemetery, St. Elmo. William R. Lee Maurer, Decatur, 1 p.m., Morn and Goble Funeral Home. Cheryl M. Pittinger, 84, Vandalia, 1:30 p.m., Holy Cross Lutheran Cemetery, Ramsey. Roberta Jean York, 80, Decatur, 10 a.m., Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. Next is Dear Abby. Dear Abby, Mom taking step into dating is tripped up by daughter. Dear Abby, I'm a single mom in my 40s and my daughter is 12. After my last relationship 10 years ago, not with her father, I took a leave of absence from the dating world to concentrate on myself and being the best mom I could. Fast forward. When I attempt to talk to anyone of the opposite sex, My daughter has a fit. She has hidden my car keys and my phone, pouts if I go out, and behaves like an all-out brat. I have reassured her that I love her and always will. Also, I would never allow anyone around her if I had any suspicion that he might not be good for her. Nothing works. I have spoken with only one person I would even think of introducing her to, but I am afraid of her attitude. Abby, what's the best way to enter into the dating world without hurting my child? I want to date, but my child won't let me. Entering the dating world again. Dear entering, your daughter likes things just the way they are and views any disruption as a threat to her lifestyle. The best way to enter into the dating world would be to do it without consulting her. If and when you meet someone and things become serious, introduce them then in a casual way. If she acts up, remember, you are the parent. Your daughter doesn't have to love someone because you do. She does, however, have to treat that person with the same respect with which you treat her friends, and you should insist upon it. You are the parent, and it's up to you to enforce the rules for as long as she lives with you. Rooming hesitation. Dear Abby, my girlfriend and I are getting ready to move to a new city in 6 months, each of us for our own careers, and plan to move in together. Some issues will need to be ironed out before we make that commitment, and my biggest concern is the anger and resentment she carries toward her semi-estranged father. I understand where it comes from and why, but it worries me to see how quickly and completely it can overwhelm her personality. I lack comparable experience, so I struggle to have constructive conversations with her about it. But I can't accept this poisonous volatility as a feature of our life together. I believe that speaking to someone would help her deal with these feelings in a healthier, more constructive way, but she rejects the idea. I don't want to bully her into counseling, but I feel like I have to do something before we take this next step for both our sakes. Would it be wrong to tell her she has to start seeing someone before I commit to moving in together? Hesitating in Florida. Dear Hesitating, no, it would not be wrong. If your girlfriend's problems with her father bleed over into her relationship with you, as it appears they have, it would be a mistake for you to move in together because it won't last. Good advice for everyone, teens to seniors, is in the anger in all of us and how we deal with it. To order, send your name and mailing address, plus check our money order for $7 to Dear Abby, Anger Booklet, Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price. Next is a column by Steve Chapman entitled, Obama's Restraint Will Be Missed. On the campaign trail, Barack Obama's foreign policy gets no love. Republicans portray it as weak, timid, inept, and rudderless. Hillary Clinton has faulted him for the rise of the Islamic State and lacking a strategy. Bernie Sanders doesn't rush to Obama's defense. The public seems to agree the president has fallen short. In the latest Economist/YouGov poll, only 36% of Americans approved of his handling of international affairs, with 49% disapproving. Fear of terrorism is at the highest level since the aftermath of 9/11. In a turbulent world beset by unpredictable and often violent changes, it's easy to deduce that the president is generating dangerous chaos. But blaming Obama for the upheaval is like arriving in town after a tornado and blaming the Red Cross for the wreckage. History is more likely to give him credit for adopting a sober strategy and making it work. It's not hard to find achievements on his record. He decimated Al-Qaeda and killed Osama bin Laden. He completed the withdrawal from Iraq. Working with Russia, he induced Syrian President Bashar Assad to agree to give up his chemical weapons. A climate change agreement committed 195 nations to curb emissions that pose a dire threat to the entire world. A landmark deal with Iran reversed its march toward acquiring the bomb. The last two items are portrayed as insane folly by Republicans who think global warming is a hoax and the Iran agreement will fail. The facts tell a different story. The planet has continued getting hotter over the last 7 years. Iran has disabled a reactor, eliminated thousands of centrifuges, shipped enriched uranium out of the country, and accepted stringent inspections. Perhaps more important than what Obama has done is what he has chosen not to do. He has refused to undertake a war against Assad. He rejected aggressive action when Russia invaded Ukraine. He avoided entanglement in Libya. He didn't send large numbers of ground forces to fight the Islamic State. He preferred military option has been his preferred military option has been one notable for minimizing costs and risks to American. Drone strikes. An interview with Jeffrey Goldberg in the Mark the Atlantic makes clear that these choices grew out of a shrewd sense of limits and priorities. Obama believes that Churchillian rhetoric and, more to the point, Churchillian habits of thought helped bring his predecessor, George W. Bush, to ruinous war in Iraq, writes Goldberg. He was particularly mindful of promising victory in conflicts he believed to be unwinnable. He has no use for the notions that the U.S. should jump into conflicts to preserve its credibility. Dropping bombs on someone to prove that you're willing to drop bombs on someone is just about the worst reason to use force, Obama has told aides. Even his defenders think he blundered in promising a penalty if Assad used chemical weapons and then changing his mind. But Obama obviously thinks that if he erred, it was in the original vow, not in the ultimate forbearance. He calls what he calls the Washington playbook prescribed robust intervention. But that approach is a trap that can lead to bad decisions, he told Goldberg. In the midst of an international challenge like Syria, you get judged harshly if you don't follow the playbook, even if there are good reasons why it does not apply. It was as tough a decision as I've made, but the right decision. Sacrificing American lives in idealistic crusades is not something he's willing to do. An unsentimental skeptic, Obama sometimes clashes with advisors pushing for action to avert humanitarian disasters. I want a president who has the sense that you can't fix everything, he says. Privately, he's enunciated his chief rule, don't do stupid stuff. His biggest departure from that policy was in Libya, where he authorized airstrikes against Muammar Gaddafi. We actually executed this plan as well as I could have expected, he says. And despite all that, Libya is a mess. The obstacle, Goldberg writes, sealed Obama's fatalistic view. That revelation alone distinguishes Obama from one wartime president after another in his ability to acknowledge a serious failure, avoid compounding it, and learn from the experience. As the unforeseen consequences of the Iraq War continue reverberating through the Middle East, Obama deserves credit for sparing us from new mistakes. Right now, it may be hard to appreciate the value of his restraint, but we'll miss it when he's gone. Here is another column by Mary Hunt on this slow news day entitled, Easy Ways to Boost Your Income. Of all the people I know and love, I can't think of anyone who wouldn't welcome a small income boost. Whether you're between jobs, figuring out how to cover a bill, or hoping to stash more cash into savings, get your creative juices flowing with these ideas. Don't overinsure. You need term life insurance. The recommended is 8 to 10 times the annual income of the single breadwinner. In a two-income family, insure each spouse for 6 to 8 times their annual gross salary. But you can confidently cancel duplicate coverage. The boost. Add up what you're paying for credit card insurance, life insurance for your kids, mortgage insurance, and accident insurance. What was offered to you for just pennies a day is probably about $100 a month or more that you will save. Caution. Get a term life policy first if you don't have one. Then cancel the duplicates. Don't leave even the tiniest gap between coverage. Call your auto insurer. Has your teenage driver brought home a great report card? Most auto insurance companies will knock off about 10% of your premium if an insured teen maintains a 3.0 GPA. Is there an educator in the family? Mercury Insurance and other companies give discounts to credentialed teachers and educational administrators. Discounts also apply if you have a bachelor's degree in engineering or a science-related field. Finally, insurers often give discounts of 20% or more when you insure all of your cars with one company. Caution. Don't assume that discounts are automatic. You have to speak up. Ask to see a complete list since companies offer different ones. The Boost. Compound discounts can really add up for a big save. Fatten your paycheck. If you receive a tax refund, rethink your initial urge to spend it. Save some bucks. Another way to look at it, you're giving Uncle Sam an interest-free loan to have less withheld from your paychecks. File a new W-4 with your employer and increase your number of allowances. Caution: don't overadjust your W-4 or you could end up owing the IRS next year. Pull out your last federal tax return for reference and go to the IRS website to calculate how many allowances you should. The Boost. If you're getting a $2,000 tax refund, adjust your withholding for next year. Adjusting it will increase your net income by about $163 each month. Moonlight. Take a second job at a craft store. Taking one made all the difference for one of my readers, Catherine. It was challenging to go to my second job, but I boosted our income enough to get us through a rough patch, said Catherine. Typically, the food service industry, drug stores, and retail stores offer part-time work. Caution: unless you've suffered a loss of income, taking on a second job could push you into a higher tax bracket. Run the numbers before moving forward. The Boost. Your earnings depend on the jobs available. Catherine worked 10 to 20 hours a week at her second job, earning just over minimum wage per hour. This increased their family income by up to $400 monthly. Freelance. There are three websites you should visit to get a feel for a freelance gig that fits your talents and skills. Upwork, an online freelancing platform where small businesses connect with qualified professionals. If you are a writer, programmer, graphic designer, marketer, or have other skills to offer, you can bid on jobs and be contracted for doing what you do best. Fiverr is a global online marketplace offering tasks and services beginning at $5 per job performed, from which the company gets its name. TaskRabbit is an online mobile marketplace that allows users to outsource small jobs and tasks to others in their neighborhood. Users name the task and price they are willing to pay, and pre-approved contractors bid to win the job. Think of TaskRabbit as an eBay for real-world labor. The internet is filled with reputable freelance companies in a multitude of industries. Caution: make sure your daytime employer has no restrictions on freelancing. The Boost. Jobs at Upwork vary and can pay up to $500 per project for writers and $1,000 per project for programmers. Fiverr and TaskRabbit vary. Check them out for more information. And that is the end of part 2 of the Tuesday, March 15th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. This has been Captain Rick reporting. Have a great rest of the day.